Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237 Teamsters. With us, very special guest, first time, Kelly Ryan. She is the deputy vice president for pharma state policies. In this job, Kelly provides support for farmers' policies that involve the entire Northeast, which includes New York, where she's currently the primary policy leader. On the national level, Kelly is the lead for the state commercial market work and member of the American Benefits Council Policy Board. Prior to joining pharma, Kelly served as senior associate general counsel and Director of Regulatory Affairs in United Healthcare. Kelly was also the principal of Hennens Stubbs Health Law and Government Relations Practice, where she served as the key member of Farmers New York team representing health insurers, medical schools, and research facilities. Prior to that, Kelly served as legislative counsel for New York State Senator Martin Golden. Kelly is also a graduate of Russell Sage College and Ohio State University School of Law. She is a member of the New York State Bar. Kelly, welcome to Reaching Out.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you for coming on.
Of course.
Okay, and I understand there's a little known federal government program, a nationwide program called 340B. It was created in 1992 during the George H.W. Bush administration with the goal of lowering what hospitals and clinics pay for medicines and would ultimately mean lower prices for patients. Could you tell us how this program works?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. This is very much a little known program, right? Like lots of people have never heard of this. And would be surprised to hear that it's actually the second largest federal drug program behind Medicare Part D, right? It's a $66 billion program, which is huge. And what the program is designed to do, at least as it was originally conceived, was to make sure that safety net providers, right, like safety net hospitals, rural hospitals, clinics that are really providing care for the most vulnerable patients are receiving, you know, a significant discount on medicines. The easiest way to think about it is like the deal that Medicaid gets on medicines, right? To make sure that these providers are, you know, getting the best price that they can. And then the idea was that if they're reimbursed by a commercial payer, like, you know, the welfare benefit plan or any other health insurer, and they receive, you know, more reimbursement than what they get the drug for, they can use that spread to provide benefit to the community, right? Whether that's lower cost drugs, whether that's, you know, outreach clinics, transportation, things like that. So that's the idea of the program.
So this is the first time I'm hearing of the program. And it's been around since 1992. So despite its good intentions, what are some of the problems that we're seeing with it?
Yeah, so the program, you know, it started in 1992, and I would say up until about 2010, it really sort of lived in the space that I just described, right? It was very focused on the providers that are serving the safety net. But what's happened, like I said, now it's become the second largest federal program in the drug space. We're seeing 20% year over year growth. And one of the problems is, you know, large corporations, especially big chain pharmacies and PBMs and hospitals, have figured out how to make money off this program. And so there was a change in guidance at the federal level that I won't get too weedy, but basically said, hey, hospital participating in 340B, you can work with as many pharmacies as you want. It never used to be that way, right? So in 2010, before that before that guidance came out, just to give some context, there were 2,300 of these called contract pharmacies. Now there are over 205,000 of them once they sort of opened it up. And that's why we've seen this program grow dramatically. The problem is there's zero transparency into how all of the money that's funneling through the system, that $66 billion, is being used by the providers, right? Some are absolutely providing the benefits that we talked about earlier, doing really good work in the community. But that's huge growth. And there are no rules about how, very specifically how that money has to be used or how it's reported. So there's zero transparency into kind of where all of this money is going and questions about whether it's actually helping, the patients that it's supposed to.
So let's specifically talk about New York, our clinics, hospitals, and drug costs. How does this program affect New York?
Right. So it's grown a lot in New York too, right? So there are 113 hospitals in the state that participate in the program. Those hospitals have contract pharmacy relationships with over 6,000 contract pharmacies. And by and large, those are kind of the what we'd refer to as like the big four pharmacy chains, right? These are not typically your local community pharmacies that are providing a lot of services on the ground. These are the big guys. These are the big guys that are connected with the PBMs. And a good percentage of them are actually not even in the state of New York, right? They're spread all over. They're not in the underserved communities that the program was designed for. And so we're seeing a lot of shift into more affluent communities away from the folks that should be benefiting from this program and just profit margins going up and up and up.
So tell us, the program was intended to manage costs. And we've seen an increase in costs since 1992 over the years. So this program is basically ineffective.
Yeah, I mean, the program has, if you compare the growth, like I said earlier, it's, over 20% year-over-year growth in this program. I mean, trust me, we have high growth in healthcare costs in general, but that outpaces even sort of the standard growth in healthcare costs, right? So something's clearly up. And you're absolutely right. We can't show clearly that all of this growth and all of these dollars sort of kicking around the system are actually helping the patients at the pharmacy counter or even in the community. Like I said, some folks are absolutely doing it. I want to be like very clear that there are absolutely good actors in this program. But for example, if you're, one of your union members probably doesn't know that he or she is a 340B patient, right? The program attaches to the hospital, not to the patient. So we've all gotten 340B drugs. We probably have no idea because we've never heard of the program that that's what's happening. So if I walk into a hospital that's a 340B hospital, I get a prescription, I walk down the street to the contract pharmacy, that hospital is probably getting a 50, 60% discount on the medicine. And then I walk into the contract pharmacy, and I pay my full copay. If I am uninsured, there's a good chance that I'm paying the list price of that drug. And if I'm in the deductible, I'm paying a big piece, right? None of that is flowing through to folks that are, struggling with healthcare costs every day.
Now, how would you know that you are in a 340B hospital with a 340B prescription plan?
Yeah, you probably don't. That's the thing. Like, unless you know about the program and happen to look up and say, Hospital X is part of the program. The average person has no idea that they are a 340B patient or that their provider is getting that kind of discount because they're not seeing it.
So, as the president of Local 237 and my union, a lot of our and other unions provide our members with medical and prescription drug insurance plan covered by our welfare fund. Does the 340B program impact union members, public sector, and or private sector unions?
Yeah, it sure does. So, first that example we just talked about, right? That, union members probably have great coverage and they're, they have coverage, right? So they're not walking in and having to pay the full list price because they're uninsured. So they're
Yes.
step in the right direction, but they still have to pay their full copay when there's a lot of savings in the system. And then even more broadly, we know there's mounting evidence that this program is really driving a lot of costs for employers. So when you all are at the negotiating table trying to work out a good deal for your members, and healthcare costs are always a big part of those conversations, we know that it is driving costs for commercial payers, just like the Welfare Benefits Fund, exponentially, frankly. Like, more and more studies keep coming out. So over the summer, we saw an analysis that just looked at self-insured employers, like unions. And that analysis said that the 340B program drives costs for those employers by 4.2%, right? It'd be 4.2% higher because of the 340B program, which translates into $5.2 billion. And that's just because the employer benefit plans are not getting the commercial rebates that you would otherwise negotiate. It's kind of getting gobbled up earlier in the system. And so you are losing out on that piece of the dollar. And then we also know that there is a very significant hospital markup on these medicines. And so as a payer, you're paying sometimes like five, six, seven times more than what the hospital paid for the drug. The treasurer in the state of North Carolina took a look at this for the state teachers plan, and he just looked at oncology drugs and found that, hospitals were charging commercial insurers nearly five times what they paid to acquire the drug. So it's absolutely driving costs for you as a union leader, for your members, and for employers across the board.
You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters. Very special guest, Kelly Ryan, who is the Deputy Vice President for Pharma State Policies. So, what can we do?
Yeah. Well, first, this is an important first step, right? Like, just raising some awareness. Most people don't even know that this program exists, and kind of frankly paying attention. And there is some activity in the legislature that is important for folks to pay attention to. I talked at the beginning about contract pharmacies. That's really sort of the mechanism that's driving this growth, this big explosion in the number of contract pharmacies. And there's a bill, Senate Bill 1913, that would basically lock in this idea of completely unfettered growth in the contract pharmacy space, right? That there could be no guardrails around it, that manufacturers can't ask for data to say, hey, I want to make sure it's really a patient of the right hospital, basically just like cut the reins and let it loose. And so a bill like that we're seeing across the country, but also in New York, is just going to kind of add fuel to the fire that we're seeing this growth year over year over year.
So essentially, over the years, this program has actually cost us more money than it should have.
Yeah.
So how do we recoup that money? How do we combat that, or how do we bring down the cost?
I think that, the first step is really getting a hold on this program, right? So what you're seeing is kind of the like the squeezing of the balloon, right? This massive growth in 340B is pushing costs to employers like yourself, like the union, and even like small employers. Everybody that's buying insurance in the commercial marketplace is paying more because this program is out there. So I think, first of all, really shining a light on the growth of the program, stopping legislation that would exacerbate the growth of the program, and really having an honest conversation about getting the program back to what it was supposed to be. It's an important program. It was designed to help safety net providers who are helping the most vulnerable among us, right? They're doing really great work. Those folks should be benefiting from this program, but we know that 80% of the spending goes to big hospitals. A bigger chunk every year is going to kind of these middlemen, whether they're consultants or, the PBMs or the pharmacies that are owned by the PBMs. And so we're seeing a real shift away from the providers and the people that were supposed to benefit this, and doing exactly like we're doing today, like talking about it and raising some awareness, because it's such a, nerdy topic that nobody really has on their radar. I think just really kind of raising the flag and having this discussion is important.
Yeah, but I've seen so many flags raised, but I've never seen any flag picked up after it was raised. It just It's just waves in the wind. What can I do to start this? Because actually, I would think there would be legal action. So, is there somebody we could talk to, some firm, something to start going after this program that we could start actually putting it in front of a judge so that we can have action? Because, I mean, awareness is one thing, action's another.
Yeah, there is a lot of litigation going on already. It's sort of all over the place, frankly, but I think the easiest thing we can do is, at the state level immediately is weigh in on bills that would expand the program or kind of continue the growth in the program, right? So, asking some questions about Senate Bill 1913 and saying, hey, is this really the direction we want to go? Is this program really benefiting New Yorkers? What's it costing employers? Just having that really meaningful conversation. Because if we don't sort of stop the bleeding in the first place, it's hard to like turn the
So
ship.
is that's New York State Senate Bill 1913? Okay.
And that bill just moved, out of committee this week. The Senate's considering it, they're having a conversation about it. And I think it's really important for voices like employers to say, well, hey, we understand what this program is trying to do. It's a federal program. It needs some reform. I think we all agree it needs some reform, but let's not take what's wrong with the program and lock it into state law, right? That doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Like, let's have a real conversation about fixing the program, but let's not take the bad stuff and just like, because once it's in state law, it's never going away.
So does Senate Bill 1913 put the bad stuff in the bill?
The Senate Bill 1913 would lock in one of the key problems in the 340B program, this huge growth in contract pharmacies. And that concept actually doesn't even exist in the federal law. It's just something that the federal agency that oversees it made up. But the Senate bill would take this, sub-regulatory idea and lock it into state statute. And that's very concerning for us because then, as the legislature takes a long time to undo stuff. Once it's there, then New York is kind of living under the worst version of this program.
So, what do we do to make sure that this doesn't happen? We have to speak to the senator and let them know that this is a bad bill.
Yeah, absolutely. And
Is
just
there.
ask the important questions about, we know that this is driving costs for employers. We are having a conversation at the state level about affordability, right? Health insurance is expensive. It's a big concern for you all. It's a big concern for small employers. It's the whole range. And we should be having the right before we pass a bill like this, have a meaningful conversation about what's the real impact of the program and locking in some of the worst parts of the program as a state law.
So is your team working on that, or is there somebody that we could have our lobbyists contact you and they could also weigh in?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are very, vocally opposed to Senate Bill 1913 because of all the things we just talked about, right? We are supportive of the program. We want the program to work right. So definitely, we're a good starting point. I will say that, employer groups are starting to pay attention to this. It's been, such sort of an under the radar program for so long. It had to get to this point of being, really problematic for folks to start to pay attention and be like, oh, wait, this is having an impact. Like you mentioned at the top, I work with the American Benefits Council, which represents large employers. And I hear all the time at the meetings, like even like these, great big benefit plans are starting to recognize that this is a problem. So the employer community in general is waking up, but just kind of adding to that voice and continuing to raise questions, I think is really important.
Going forward in the pursuit of cutting healthcare costs and ensuring transparency, can you see other ways that the public can get involved?
So obviously we just represent a small piece of the healthcare dollar, right? It's, our association represents the brand manufacturers and for medicines. One problem we see in our space is about half of all of the spending on brand medicine goes to folks other than like my members, right? The folks that research and develop it. So this idea that bits and pieces are getting lost along the system and costs are going up. 340B is a part of that. The operation of great big vertically integrated PBMs is also a part of that. And just making sure that all of these dollars that are sort of swishing around the system are actually getting to patients and to employers who are paying the premium, but really patients at the pharmacy counter, right? Like your folks shouldn't be walking into the pharmacy to pick up their medicine and pay more than their health insurer, their PBM paid for that medicine, or five times more than the hospital in a 340B program paid for that medicine. That seems inequitable to us.
Yeah, and that would be our members walking into the pharmacy paying. That would be our benefit funds.
Exactly.
Shelling out the money to pay for the funds. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I want to know, what can we do? Could we, I mean, we have lawyers that do securities litigation. It would be helpful for them to understand what it is, because maybe they could go after some of the companies and recoup some of that money for us.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting beyond my expertise. I'm a recovering lawyer at this point. But, you know, you're right. There's
Once you think you're out, we pull you back in again.
Exactly. You can never really let it go.
Yeah. So what can we do to protect ourselves from the healthcare predators?
I'm not sure what you mean by healthcare predators.
I'm talking about the people who just gouge funds for the sake of profit.
Yeah. Well, honestly, one thing is to raise some concern about the 340B program and Senate Bill 1913, because we know that billions and billions of dollars are going to, you know, large hospital chains and for-profit entities and driving up costs for you guys. And another piece of that is, because all of that money is sloshing around the system and big sophisticated players have figured out that there's a lot of money to be made, it's also driving consolidation, which drives up costs for you guys. So when you see, you know, independent physician practices getting bought up by big hospital systems, that's a piece of this 340B problem. And that's, you know, that's also a problem for increasing costs.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on Reaching Out. And we're going to ask you to come back again if we need to discuss this issue further. And I think we need to just see if maybe we could get a meeting with some of our lobbyists so that they could understand exactly what it is that we want to oppose. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reaching Out. Very special guest for this segment, very informative, Kelly Ryan, Deputy Vice President for Pharma State Policies. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much. It was very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you also. And we're going to have a conversation offline. I want to convene a meeting with our lobbyists, and we can put that together, and I know how to get to you.
Great.
And talk about this issue further. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.